involved in a series, and this is the final lesson of a series on stewardship. The first lesson was several weeks back on be rich in good works, and we focused on being honest and sharing and those basic things that God expects us to do in terms of generosity. And then in the second lesson, we talked about godly giving, giving like God gives, and that giving is an act of worship and thanksgiving. And then we want to reflect chiefly the image of God is why we give. And then the last lesson, we talked about tithing, that principle that we suggested that the Bible shares with us, that we can begin to know if we start at 10% and go up that God is pleased with our giving. And then this week, we're finishing off this series by thinking about a personal finance lesson on hiring a new manager. I remember reading about a company that was a takeover company, and whenever they would buy out a company and would go in, though it may seem hard, the first thing they would do is they would dismiss or fire the managers and those who led the company. And the reason behind this was is that what those managers had been doing and the environment that they were creating was losing money, that they were failing. And so they didn't want to just try to have to resurrect them. They wanted to bring in their own people who could start fresh and make the company succeed. In the sporting world, it's amazing to look at the average tenure of coaches in professional athletics. For example, the median number of seasons for NFL coaches is only a little over 4 years. In NHL, the hockey league, it's only 2.5 years. So most coaches are very new with their team. In the Major League Baseball, the managing position is 3.8 seasons is the median number of years that the managers have been in place. And in the NBA, not quite 3 years. Now, why is that the case? It's because when those professional sports franchises begin to lose, the one who chiefly gets the blame is the coach. And if they're going to try to change the team, they will begin at the top. So they typically will change the coach. In chapter 16 of the book of Luke, our text for this morning, open up to that passage. Jesus said, "There was a rich man who had a manager, and charges were brought to him that this man was wasting his possessions. And he called him and said to him, 'What is this that I hear about you? Turn in the account of your management, for you can no longer be manager.'" Jesus said, we've got a manager who is wasting his possessions. And in this story, he says, turn in all your things because you're no longer going to be the manager. This morning, I think that you and I need to look at our lives. And maybe it's time we fire ourselves as the manager. Let me repeat that. Fire ourselves as the manager. And I'm going to share with you four principles that we need to hire in the new manager. I like this principle when it comes to leadership. That is that no one often knows the situation better than the present leader. No one knows your financial situation better than you. And truthfully, just about everybody knows what they need to do. You know what you need to do. You know it better than some guru that has a MBA could tell you. You know what you need to do in your situation. But it takes discipline, it takes hard work, it takes effort, it takes sacrifice to do that. Here's what I'm suggesting. Have a hard conversation with yourself. Say to yourself, "Self, we're not doing very good at managing money." In fact, be upset at yourself. Have a little pity party. Get upset. Fire yourself. Walk out the door. Leave your house, say, "I'm fired, that guy's gone." Come back in and determine to be a different new manager. No one knows the situation better than you. Therefore, you have the power to change. There's four principles that I want to suggest this morning that you need to apply from the Bible in the new manager position. First one is this. You need to be involved in... don't be consumed by consumption. A fictional story about a preacher who went to work in London, and he was asked to go way across town and preach at a church. He didn't have enough money to
buy bus fare for the way back. He could get bus fare across town. So he claimed the promise of Philippians 4:19, God shall supply all my needs. So he said, Lord, I'm going to go and I'm sure they'll pay me something. He goes and he preaches. Preached hard. Maybe he preached too hard. They didn't pay him anything. He's walking back home. Long walk home. And he's upset at God. Once again, fictional story. He's upset at God. He says, God, I trusted you to pay me. I went out on faith to take this and you didn't pay me. God answers him like this. God says, well, I promised to meet all your needs. And right now, your biggest need is exercise. Sometimes what we think we want and what God thinks we need is two different things. Sometimes what we need the most is not more money, but more discipline. Just like this preacher needed more exercise. For most Americans, we think we need more money, and I understand there's a lot of truth to that many times. But often what we need more is more discipline. In Proverbs chapter 21, verse 20, in the house of the wise are stores of choice food and all, and are stores of choice food and oil, but the foolish man devours all he has. The paraphrased version, the Living Bible, translates it like this. The wise man saves for the future, but the foolish man spends whatever he gets. Look at Luke chapter 12, just a few chapters back from our text of Luke 16. In Luke chapter 12, the story of the rich fool in verse 15. He said to them, take care and be on guard against all covetousness. For one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. And then he told them a parable. The land of a rich man produced plentifully. And he thought to himself, what shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops. And he said, I will do this. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones. Therefore I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry. You see, this fool's problem was not that his business was growing. It's not that he had nowhere to store his grain. The problem was he was consumed with consumption. Jesus is telling a parable about those whose life consists in the abundance of things. All their hope, all their focus is on the stuff of this world. And that man this evening was told full by God. Verse 20, this night your soul is required of you. And the things you have prepared, whose will they be? Verse 21, so is the one. Who lays up treasure for himself. You see, the problem is not laying up treasure. The problem is laying up treasure for yourself and is not rich toward God. Don't be consumed by consumption. I want to show you a chart of the American savings rate. I know that it may be a little hard to see all these numbers from back. This is the percentage of savings rate, beginning at 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14. These are years. 1959 it begins. Hit almost a 12% high in 1968 to 1970. And then notice how it's continued to decline through the 80s, 90s. It hit a low point in the early 2000s. They say even in some years, and even some months especially, that we as Americans overall have a negative savings rate. What that means is that we either borrow money or we either use savings to spend in those months more than we make. But you see how our savings rate now, after the recession of 2008 and 9, savings rate rose quite significantly because people were having a tough time, so they began saving again. But then you see in 2013, how the savings rate declined again. It is right around 2%. Here's the principle. Don't be consumed with consumption. Many times we buy into the concept that the American economy depends upon us being foolish spenders. One of the lines that drives me crazy, and advertisers use this all the time, is you deserve this. You deserve this. You're entitled to this. You may not can afford it, but you deserve it. That is an advertising attempt to try to appeal to our greed so that we will be consumed by consumption.
Second principle you need to look for in a new manager is don't borrow yourself into bondage. We all understand that there's a time and place and often a necessity for debt. But problem managing principle number one, don't be consumed with consumption, can easily lead to managing principle number two, borrowing ourselves into bondage. In Proverbs 22, verse 7, the Bible says this, "The rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is a servant or slave to the lender." If you go back to Luke chapter 16, the Bible says in verses 10 and following,
Jesus speaking about this, he says, "One who is faithful in very little is also faithful in much. One who is dishonest in very little is also dishonest in much. If then you have not been faithful in the unrighteous wealth, who will entrust to you the true riches?" Much of the issue about managing our wealth and choosing how much debt we get in and all those things is about our stewardship. And about us doing the best we can, being faithful with what God has given us. Seems that one of the big problems I know in many people's lives is that major indebtedness cripples people's happiness, their joy, and their productivity. It hinders marriage relationships. Money is often cited. Some statistics say as high as 90% of marital problems. People that have divorce and things, money is a part of that. Money is a big issue when it comes to relationship tension and problems in marriages and also in family relationships. And so much of that has to do with debt. It steals the joy. It hinders service for Christ. People often want to give. They want to help out more for causes that are dear to their heart, but they can't because of major indebtedness. Because they have already chosen years back where those dollars are going to go. And maybe they don't want them going there now, but that debt is crippling their happiness. It cripples what they can do with their time and what they can do with their money. Don't borrow yourself into bondage. Let me read you some statistics. The average American household debt today, this is from the U.S. Census Bureau, real recent statistics, is $117,000. The average credit card debt, and this is a number that if you talk to bankers and others, they'll tell you you can find a lot of different statistics out there on that and all from reputable sources, and they're all different in some ways. But generally speaking, those who carry a balance, statistic that seemed to be in that general range, of those who carry a balance, the average debt is about $8,000 that's being carried on credit cards. According to Experian, the average auto loan in the fourth quarter of 2013 was $27,000. An increase of $739. The average auto loan for used vehicles has increased to almost $18,000. Now, I want you to understand, I'm not saying it's sinful to have an auto loan. What I'm saying is that don't be enslaved to it. And don't be crippled by it. So it ruins your marriage. It hurts your relationship with Christ. And it controls your time and your stress and your anxiety. And so don't buy in to all that the world says you have to be happy so that you borrow yourself into bondage. Overall, the average auto loan is scheduled to last between 5 years and 3 months. And in February of 2014, the average car loan was at least 6 years. In 2013, the average college graduate got out of college with $3,000 of credit card debt to go along with their $35,000 in student and personal loan debt. Debt can cripple us. Don't borrow yourself into bondage. Debt, in principle, is not evil or sinful,
But it can become sinful, and it can hinder our faith and cause and bring in all kinds of sin by Satan.
Number one, don't be consumed with consumption. Number two, don't borrow yourself into bondage. Number three, in the new manager, you need, when you fire yourself and you come back in, say, these are principles I want to apply. Number three, don't sell your soul for success. Young people, listen to me on this one. As you think about your career, your jobs, and you think about what you want to do,
whatever it is, make sure that Jesus and His church remains a priority in your life and that you're not selling your soul for success. In Luke chapter 16, our text once again,
in verse 13 through 15, notice what the Bible says. No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other. He will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. The Pharisees, who were lovers of money. What were the Pharisees? Then we think about the Pharisees. They were the righteous people who prayed in the streets and said, look at me. Look at all the things I do. I fast and I give and all these things. But what were the Pharisees really in their heart? Jesus says, they were lovers of money. And they heard all these things and they ridiculed him. And he said to them, you are those who justify yourselves before men, but God knows your hearts. For what is exalted among men is an abomination in the sight of God.
And then if you continue on down in this chapter of Luke 16, you also find in the story that we often use to talk about eternal things, the story of the rich man and Lazarus.
But you know, if you read that story and you step back and you quit thinking so much about the spiritual dimension that we get fascinated with about eternity, and you look about it from an earthly perspective, what's that story about? It's about a rich man who was consumed with things. It's about a poor man. The rich man exchanged or sold his soul for success. He never thought about the poor man who lay at his gate begging daily. And the rich man goes to torments. And he wants just a drop of water to cool his anguish. What's the story really about? In a lot of ways, it's about money and us being kind and generous to the oppressed and the poor.
Don't sell your soul for success. In Proverbs chapter 12, the Bible speaks about this concept in verse 11 and 12.
The house of the wicked will be destroyed, but the tent of the upright will be flourishing. There is a way that seems right to man, but its end is the way of death. And then in Matthew chapter 16, Jesus would speak about this concept, and he says, y'all have heard this verse. For whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits or exchange his soul?
If you are successful, I remember a man I talked to one time in Texas. He said his goal when he was young was to have everything. He wanted to be the richest man in the world.
He made fun of Christians, ridiculed Christians. He said he thought it was the silliest thing to waste time and money going to church and giving money to a church. Somebody gave him a copy of the New Testament one time, and he read it so that he could have weapons to make fun of Christians with. Started reading the book of Romans. Romans was so interesting, he then started reading other books of the New Testament. Through reading the Bible, becoming a Christian, his entire philosophy of life changed. You see, the Bible teaches us right the opposite. Rather than wanting to be the richest man in the world, we want to be the greatest man through service and through faith in Jesus.
In this question then, how do people sell their soul for success? Let me share a few ways with you. By making money their aim, by greed. All of us need to constantly be fighting greed. We live in a world that is constantly appealing to our fleshly desires, and greed is always a temptation. If you make money your aim, like the rich man, like the rich fool,
like the rich young ruler. All these examples, they're Bible stories that you know. What's the goal? What's the aim? What's the message? They each made money and success their focus. The next thing is being dishonest. Some people will sell their soul by being dishonest. Make money, but make money ethically and honestly. Recently, I was talking to a man, and we were talking about something, and I said, I think it's worth about this much. And he said, well, you know, actually, I don't think it's worth that much. I think it's worth a little less. He could have made a little extra money on that product he was selling me, but he valued his honesty, and he valued a relationship and a friendship more than a few extra dollars. Now, that is a really, maybe an exaggerated illustration, because we're not really even required to go that hard, but that shows a man's character and his honesty. Don't sell your soul by being dishonest. Make money through immoral products. There's a lot of ways to make money in this world, but let's don't make money through being involved with immoral products and things that are sinful. And so consider how you're making the money. And finally, don't sell your soul for success by making work all you do, and by spending all your time and neglecting family and church. So don't sell your soul for success by making money your aim, by being dishonest, by making money through sinful practices, or by working too much. The final thing we need to understand in changing our managing philosophy and hiring a new manager is don't neglect to prepare and protect. Prepare and protect. In Luke 16, back to our story, back to the earlier part of the text, in verses 3 through 9, the manager said to himself, "What shall I do? Since my master is taking the management away from me, I am not strong enough to dig, and I'm ashamed to beg. I have decided what to do, so that when I am removed from my management, people may receive me into their houses." He summoned the master's debtors one by one. He said to the first one, "How much do you owe my master?" He said, 100 measures of oil. He said to him, "Take your bill, sit down quickly, and write 50. He said to another, "How much do you owe?" He said, 100 measures of wheat. He said to him, "Take your bill and write 80. This master commended the dishonest manager for his shrewdness. Now listen to what Jesus says. "For the sons of the world, the people of the world, are more shrewd in their dealing with their own generation than the sons of light. And I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of unrighteous wealth, so that when it fails, they may receive you into the eternal dwellings." What's Jesus saying here? It's kind of an odd principle. Jesus is saying, you as Christians, you cannot be dishonest as they're dishonest. But you still need to realize money is a tool, and you need to use it wisely. Use it to even make friends with people so that they will have you, your help. They'll help you when you fall. Now think about what Jesus is saying in a broader perspective. Jesus is saying, you need to consider your preparation and your protection for future things. Some suggestions on that is, number one, keep good records. Proverbs 27, the passage that was read, talks about this idea. Know well the conditions of your flocks, verse 23, and give attention to your herds, for riches do not last forever, nor does a crown endure to all generations. Know what you have coming in, and know what you have going out. Keeping good records and doing something that to many of us is almost like a four-letter word, budget. And ever so often setting down and figuring out how much you're taking in and how you're going to spend it, and putting a dollar, a name on a dollar, and having some schedules will make a tremendous difference. And plan for the future. Proverbs chapter 6 through 8. "Go to the ant, O sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise. Without having any chief, officer, or ruler, she prepares her bread in summer and gathers her food in harvest. How long will you lie there, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to the rest, and poverty will come over you. Plan for the future.
Let me read you some more statistics as we think about this point.
The percentage of Americans who are near retirement with less than $30,000 in their retirement accounts. 75%, it says, of Americans. Share of Americans who do not have enough money saved for several months of bills. 3 out of 4, it says. The average American family savings account balance, $3,800. The percentage of workers who are not saving for retirement, 40%. 25% of Americans have no savings at all. What about your preparation for the future? Savings, retirement, insurance, a will. These often require discipline. You know, sometimes I think we're like the joke that Tim Hawkins, the comedian, tells. When this guy had his snack food all laid out before him. He had him, let's say, a mellow yellow drink, and he had him a bunch of Cheetos, and he had him some Snicker candy bars and all these things. And he said, you know what, before I eat this delicious meal, let's have a prayer. And in the prayer he says, God, please make this meal healthy. Please help our bodies to be used and fueled for your service. And really what you're thinking is, God, turn this fattening, awful food into something that's great for my system so I can be healthy. What's God thinking? Maybe you need to adjust your choices a little bit. Now that's a joke that a comedian uses, and we might think about it dietarily, but here's the point. Maybe we're often thinking and praying, and I understand we have the key issue is trust and faith, but maybe God is saying when we think about the future too, that we have some responsibility and that we maybe need to change some of our choices so that God can align himself with us and then bless us. And so don't neglect to prepare and protect. Hiring a new manager. These are four principles that I know all of us can apply and all of us can use. Don't be consumed with consumption. Don't borrow yourself into bondage. Don't sell your soul for success. And don't neglect to prepare and protect. Maybe you today need to say, I'm firing my old manager and I'm hiring a new one. You know your situation. You know how these principles can be applied to your unique situation. You're the best person. Your family can apply them better than anybody else to your unique situation. And so it's up to you to do that. Maybe the decision you make today will have tremendous impact 5, 10, 15 years down the road because you chose to fire and hire a new manager today. If you need to respond to the Lord's invitation, if you want to put Christ on in baptism, we invite you to come as together we stand and sing.